Well, Stellenbosch University has been in the news cycle for the last 24 hours. Of course, there's a very disturbing event that's played itself out with the allegation of a racist incident where a white student crept into the room of a black student, urinated over his bedding, his desk, his computer. No matter what it is dehumanizing and it's horrible. And we hope justice prevails, not just accountability, but also justice. So that's been in the news cycle. In the meantime, tomorrow at Stellenbosch University, Justice Edwin Cameron will be installed as the university's 15th chancellor. He's a man, he's a jurist who's widely recognized for his brilliance and his commitment to human rights and social justice. And he's considered one of South Africa's most prominent, distinguished judicial figures. I would go as far as saying one of South Africa's best people. If you've ever been in the company of Edwin Cameron, you could definitely attest. It's beyond mensch. It's ubermensch. It's just one heck of a great guy. And even if I have to be as familiar with an esteemed member of the judiciary, Edwin, thank you so much. And you've been in a position of Chancellor of Stellenbosch. Tomorrow, it's official. You become installed as the 15th Chancellor of the Stellenbosch University. Good afternoon. Good morning to you. How are you?
Great pleasure to be with you, Lester. And yes, a day of celebration and solemnity, but also a day of remembrance, Lester, for the reason you've just given. A day of regret and grief and of hanging our heads in shame as we look forward to treading a better path in the future.
We've arranged this conversation to talk broadly about your judicial work, your vision for Stellenbosch in all its ceremonial value. Of course, that vision entrusted with the council and the rector of Stellenbosch, but also you have a vision yourself. Also, looking at your work as your judicial head of the Inspectorate of Correctional Services, which I'd also like to touch in. But your first thought, you are a alumnus of Stellenbosch University. It holds pride and place in your academic growth, your history, but also with many institutions in South Africa, also with loaded histories. Your first thoughts around the story of this alleged racist attack incident at Stellenbosch University, besides the deep regret that you just intimated on?
It really was shame. And I think one can't detach one's own race from one's response to it. I'm a white person. I benefited from apartheid. Those benefits continue even though I'm now 69 years old and towards the end of my career. And of course, what happened was a grievous, disgusting, disturbing infraction of the other student's dignity as a fellow student and a human being and a Stellenbosch. But it also enacts our past. And I think that's why I hang my head in shame, because really to urinate on another person's belongings in their private space, to address them demeaningly as boy when challenged, all of that reenacts the terrible things from our past that I grew up in and was part of. So it's very disturbing, Lester, and thank you for raising it right at the outset.
There have been videos of this offending student, Tinus Tatoi, apologizing to his res. He's now being suspended pending further investigation. Plenty of people saying, well, there's accountability. He's owned up and he's apologized. What in this instance and various instances of racial prejudice, is there a difference between accountability, which Tinus Tatoi has done? He says, I own up, I did it, I'm sorry, very tearfully, if I can recall that video. But what then is the difference in between that accountability and what we would call for justice in this case?
Wonderful question, Lester. You will remember an Adrian Besson, like me, a Stellenbosch graduate who's the head of News 24, in his very thoughtful opinion piece today, recalls the incident which happened on UFS campus where some young white people, students, purported to urinate. Adrian says they actually did. In fact, the facts show that they pretended to urinate in food that was later consumed by the women, the mamas, who cleaned their rooms and their kitchens and their bathrooms. A terribly degrading instance. I mentioned that, and I'm glad Adrian raised it, because Professor Jonathan Johnson was a vice chancellor at UFS at the time, and he had a whole process to reconcile. But the reconciliation included what you've mentioned, Lester. You don't run away from something as momentous as the reenactment of a history of racial degradation, humiliation, and subordination. You don't run away from it just with an apology. I haven't seen that apology. It's news to me. I've just heard it from you. But I have no doubt that the university will have a process. Lester, can I recall one other bit of history?
Go ahead.
The other bit of history is Stellenbosch's history, where Stellenbosch made a mistake. There were two young girls who went to a fancy dress party. I think they were Heemstede Corsairs, and they dressed themselves up for the fancy dress, and they put purple on their faces. The way the pics came out made it seem as though they were black-facing. And black-facing, as we know, has got a terrible memory in the American South and in South Africa. And they were also, they were summarily suspended, and the university later apologized to them when the full facts came out. So, Lester, all of that's a long-winded way of saying to you and to Cape Talk's listeners, who are justly, I think, indignant and concerned about this, let the university proceed with its disciplinary process. Let's see what the rector and his executive and all of them do with this. Let us see what the student says in that disciplinary process, not on the video, which I'm glad if he's already apologized, but let him do so in the solemnity and discipline of a disciplinary process. Yeah, and then we'll know more.
Yeah, there's a video that was released and circulating of this gentleman apparently recorded at him apologizing to his courses. Let's talk. Let's talk then about what we often see is the magnanimity of vulnerable groups, whether it be black South Africans, whether it be members of the LGBTQI community. Whenever there is a space of prejudice, of violation, we often see the vulnerable accepting apologies, which I believe is simply to say, whatever has happened has been a distraction for me in simply living my life. That student at Stellenbosch simply wants to study, graduate, and get on with his life. The transgendered people who receive the abuse in the street simply want to get on with their life. The domestic workers who face various prejudice, or migrants to this country simply want to get on with their lives. And when those rights are violated, they're often the first to say, you know what? I forgive, simply to get on with my life. What does that say, particularly when we deal with power and power structures in South Africa? That's often the people who have the biggest right to remain bitter and angry often say, you know what? I forgive the person. As News 24 says, the Stellenbosch student reported at 6 o'clock this morning, there was an alert says he forgives Tienus de Toy, and simply because he wants to get on with his life.
Yes. First of all, I think you're right that we have a history of enormous generosity. I'm a keen cyclist. I try to get out on my bicycle 3 times a week. I'm amazed at the readiness of people whom I pass, working class South Africans whom I pass at eye level, who readily greet initiate greetings, respond to my greetings. This is not a sentimental thing. This is to me a betokening of a rich culture of humanity acknowledging me as a white cyclist passing them, and it happens three times a week. So you're right, and my own view, Lester, is that the forgiveness of our black majority compatriots has not been matched by an equal generosity of spirit on the part of all white people. So that's the first point I'd make. The second point is that I'm a lawyer, Lester, as you rightly said, not to be pompous, but just to say that I think that this kind of incident does need a more formalized response. It's not only a matter of that generous-spirited student saying, if he apologizes, I'll forgive him. There are institutional issues. There are historical issues. And there are exemplary issues. If you can get away with this and be lucky enough to have your apology accepted, is that the end of it? I think there are bigger institutional issues, and that's why I suggested just now that we wait for Stellenbosch to proceed with it.
You, of course, have an illustrious career at the bar, at the bench, at the bench of the Apex Court, and that's all well documented. I want to focus the last 9 minutes we have it with each other on the work that you do now, and that's as the head of the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services. Of course, the adage country is judged of how not they treat the highest citizens but their lower citizens. Our lower citizens languish in South African jails. Of course, the situation of crime, violence, and the trauma of victims is well abound. I want you to, as someone who's focused on prisons and correctional services over the last few years since you left the Constitutional Court, if you were at an international summit and someone were to say in a short sentence, how would you describe the conditions of a South African prison, and how does that relate to the reasons why that person entered into that facility, and how does it leave the people still on the outside, the general citizens, how safe does that make them feel?
Lester, first of all, it's very good that we're talking about prisons now, because going back to our previous discussion, it is possible for criminal charges to arise out of the kind of gross humiliation of another person's dignity, the criminal offense of crimen injuria, which you can do through words or actions. So there may well be circumstances in which the NPA could charge the student concerned, notwithstanding his apology. The apology would be concerning is the sentence that might be imposed on him if he were to be found guilty. But the short answer to your question, Lester, is that I would say to a person, our jails are not as bad as many in the world, but they're not good enough. Yeah. There's overcrowding, there's not enough rehabilitation, there's not enough education, there's not enough medical care and responsiveness. But on the whole, I think that the corrections personnel are dealing their best hand with the hand that they've been dealt, which is not right. My main criticism of our carceral system is the punishment framework. We made a terrible mistake when we followed the UK and the US 25 years ago in enacting minimum sentences and life sentences for a far too wide range. We deflected attention from where our resources for criminal reform should go, which is into the communities, not into our jails. We do not help anyone. We do not stop crime by putting a tiny minority of rapists and murderers behind bars for life. We need to jack up the detection service. We need to jack up the on-the-ground service in our communities. We need to jack up the prosecution service so that more people are prosecuted and not only a few of them sent to jail for inordinately long periods of time.
I often recall the story of when I was still an active news reporter sitting in Blue Downs Magistrates Court. It was round about the first Operation Fiela, and they rounded up these kids in Blue Downs or town center in Mitchell's Plain. And these kids, they're what, 17, 18, they were found with singular stops of dacha. Now the attitude has completely changed when it comes to cannabis and its personal possession. But in this court, this magistrate, following the legislation in front of him, noting that these are kids who don't come from much, and he says, and they plead guilty because that is what the legal aid lawyer advises them to do. And it's and with a heavy sigh, the magistrate says, well, it's either a 300 rand fine or it's 3 months in jail. Looking at these boys directly, you can see 300 rand is very, very hard to come by, which means they go for 3 months at the age of 18 years old to what is then a college of crime, a university of crime, going and to be educated in crime in a prison system. Whereas if they had the means, a 300 rand admission of guilt fine, they would have not have been indoctrinated or possibly indoctrinated in criminal activities. And that is often a very scary point for me, that in fact, in South Africa, you're in fact criminalized for only being poor.
Correct. I agree with every word you've spoken, Lester. And of course, the moral of your story from your earlier days as a on the beat, you know, a bum on seat back of court reporter is a more profound one, which is that our whole approach to drug regulation is totally wrong. In America in the 1920s, they committed a catastrophic mistake by prohibiting all alcohol sales. What did it do? It corrupted the justice system. It corrupted all the police forces throughout America. It led to the rise of the mafia. And it was totally pointless because people were able to obtain alcohol anyway. And we're doing the same with drugs. I'm not being radical here. I have the support of perhaps our most unblemished former president, President Kgalema Motlanthe. He has signed a statement together with other distinguished international former heads of state to say we should stop this pointless, destructive, counterproductive war on drugs. Now, Lester, I'm not in the habit of making, putting my head on the block predictions. But if we decriminalize drugs, put the money into community services, we would lessen the powers of the gangs on the Cape Flats. The gangs are in collusion with the police. We know that. The evidence shows that very powerfully. We know that the gangs operate inside prisons and outside prisons. We are giving the gangs weapons in their hands by this elaborate structure of drug criminalization. Portugal decriminalized all drug use, production, and distribution. Instead of which, you tell the young kids, don't smoke, don't take alcohol, don't take any drugs. Drugs destroy you. Heroin destroys you. Tip destroys you. This is what tip does to your mind. And you regulate them strictly with a powerful public health message. You use the resources which are misspent on the international war against drugs to reconstitute communities, and you sap the gangs of one of their most powerful weapons, which is the drug crime connection.
Edwin, I'm no colored nationalist, but I care about people who look and sound like me. I'm often very shocked by the statistics of the profile of the inmate population in South Africa. So-called colored people make up 8% of South Africa's population, but colored men make up 18% of that prisoner profile. There are various socio-political, economic reasons for that. But what does it tell you of how certain groups being criminalized and provide this skewed demographic of a prison population that does not match the census statistics when it comes to the profile of the South African demographic?
You're absolutely right, Lester. there's a total overrepresentation of both colored males and of black males. Indian males and white males are wholly underrepresented. And of course, there's a socioeconomic history behind that. But there's a deeper point about this. Under apartheid, we criminalized most black men because they didn't have passes in their hands. We sent them through the jail system, much like those kids that you saw being threatened with jail in the Blue Downs Magistrate Courts 20 years ago. Something that Justice Raymond Zondo, his wonderful Prince judgment 3 years ago, struck out now. You should not be even threatened with criminal process if you're possessing or using small quantities of dacha in privacy. But we did the same systematically with millions of black men. And when Nelson Mandela became our president, he was the world's most famous prisoner, possibly history's most famous prisoner ever. And he said, we're going to start again. We enacted a Correctional Services Act in 1998. The job I now do that you've referred to, Lester, as head of the prisons inspectorate, was a Mandela innovation. Mm. We're going to have an independent arm of government that's going to check what's happening in prison to stop abuses. And the Correctional Services Act is a wonderful piece of legislation, full of rehabilitation, full of education, full of reintegration into the community. Well, like with much else in our wonderful, beautiful, flawed, struggling, half-broken, half-fixed democracy, it hasn't turned out all that well. We are still criminalizing and we are still incarcerating undue numbers of black men and colored men.
Justice Edwin Cameron, tomorrow night will be installed as the 15th Chancellor of the University of Stellenbosch. Thank you so much for your time. Best of luck. Continue serving the people of South Africa through whatever roles you do. You really are. Out of the best of us, you are the best. Justice Edwin Cameron, thanks so much for joining us here on The Morning.
Thank you so much, Lester.